Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the most interesting stories from Hacker News. Today is September 28th, 2025, and this is episode number 168.
It's great to be here. We've got a fantastic lineup today. We'll be starting with a look at Privacy Badger, the free browser extension from the EFF that's designed to stop online spying.
Then we'll dive into a thought-provoking piece called The AI Coding Trap, which explores the hidden downsides of relying too heavily on AI for software development.
After that, a classic tech rant titled, When I Say Alphabetical Order, I Mean Alphabetical Order. It's a fun look at how our computers try to be a little too smart for their own good.
We've also got a really creative hack to talk about, where someone has managed to get the game Snake running in a browser's URL address bar. It's wild.
And we'll wrap up with a more serious story from the UK, where a petition against the introduction of digital ID cards has gathered millions of signatures, sparking a big debate about privacy and government power.
All right, let's get into it. First up, we have Privacy Badger is a free browser extension made by EFF to stop spying. This one hit over 500 points on Hacker News.
Privacy Badger has been around for a while, but it's always good to see it get attention. It's made by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, and its goal is to block invisible trackers. What makes it different from a typical ad blocker is its method. It's not based on a manually curated list of domains to block.
Right. It works algorithmically. It watches to see which third-party domains are tracking you across multiple different websites. If it sees the same domain popping up and using tracking techniques on three or more separate sites, it learns that this domain is a tracker and automatically starts blocking it. The idea is to stop non-consensual surveillance, not necessarily to block all ads.
And that's a key distinction. Their FAQ says their goal is to incentivize advertisers to adopt better privacy practices. If an ad doesn't track you, Privacy Badger won't block it. This leads to a great discussion in the comments. The top comment, by user JQPABC123, makes a fantastic point about advertising in general.
They argue that the whole model of personalized ads based on your browsing history is flawed because it's rooted in the past. Their example is perfect. You search for a car, you buy a car, and then for the next month, you're bombarded with car ads. It's completely irrelevant. They advocate for context-sensitive advertising instead, showing ads based on what you're looking at right now.
Exactly. And a reply to that comment from user Sanix really drives home the economic impact of this. They tell a story about hiring a home cleaner. The total cost was $350. The person who actually did the cleaning only got $125 of that. A huge chunk of the rest went to the booking company and, crucially, to Google for the ad that got them the customer. They estimate about $75 of what they paid went straight to Google.
That is staggering. It really illustrates how much money is being siphoned out of local economies and into the ad tech ecosystem. The comment asks, how much better would the service have been if the cleaner got a 60% raise with that money? It's a powerful real-world consequence of the tracking that Privacy Badger is trying to fight.
It sparked a whole subthread about the analog hole in the gig economy. The idea of just asking the cleaner for their phone number to book them directly next time. This whole discussion really connects the dots between a seemingly simple browser extension and the massive, often inefficient economic systems that are built on top of online tracking.
Absolutely. It's not just about creepy ads. It's about where our money is actually going. A great story to kick us off.
Next up, we have an article titled The AI Coding Trap, which has over 400 points. The author, Chris Loy, argues that while AI can write code incredibly fast, it creates a new set of problems. The core idea is that software development isn't about typing. It's about thinking, planning, and building a mental model of a system.
The trap, as he puts it, is that AI encourages a code-first, ask-questions-later approach. An LLM can churn out thousands of lines of code in seconds, but it does so without any real understanding of the broader context. This leaves the human developer with what the author calls the thankless tasks, debugging, testing, and integrating this mountain of code that they don't have a deep mental connection to.
I loved his analogy of the tech lead's dilemma. A good tech lead has to balance delivering features quickly with helping junior engineers learn and grow. The fast way is for the tech lead to do all the hard stuff themselves, but that's harmful in the long run. He frames AI as a lightning-fast junior engineer, and says we're falling into the trap of just letting it do all the fun generative work, which he calls vibe coding.
The Hacker News comments had a really interesting debate on this. The top comment from ShredPrez pushes back a bit, saying that any anti-AI take seems to hinge on the idea that technology just makes people lazy. They argue that if you use the AI as a tool within a proper development loop, plan, build, test, reflect, it actually lets you spend more time on the high-level thinking and architecture, which is the part they enjoy.
That's a great point. It's not the tool, it's how you use it. But then a reply from Pessimal Decimal comes in and reinforces the article's core argument. They say that a developer's primary job is to build a mental model of the system, and you simply can't do that as effectively when you're just reviewing code someone or something else wrote. They have this killer line: using AI this way means you're constantly back at day one of having to own someone else's code.
That really resonates. It's like the difference between building a piece of furniture yourself versus trying to fix one you bought from IKEA without the instructions. The discussion then goes on to ask if this is really any different from inheriting a legacy code base where the original authors have left the company.
Ultimately, the author's conclusion is that we need a new playbook. We shouldn't just use AI to write code. We should integrate it into the entire software development lifecycle, using it to refine specifications, generate documentation, scaffold modular designs, and write extensive tests before implementation. We need to act as tech leads for our AI assistants, not just treat them as code monkeys.
A very nuanced take on a topic that often gets reduced to AI is taking our jobs. Let's move on to something a bit lighter. The next post is titled, "When I Say Alphabetical Order, I Mean Alphabetical Order."
This is a classic Hacker News style rant, and I love it. The author was on a hike with his dad, they both took pictures, and they put them all in a shared folder. The file names were in the standard IMG-YYYY-MMDD-HH-MMS format, so sorting them alphabetically should have put them in chronological order, but it didn't.
Right. Pictures from his phone were all grouped together, and pictures from his dad's phone were grouped together, and the timeline was all messed up. He checked Windows, Google Drive, KDE's Dolphin File Manager, all of them got it wrong. The only thing that sorted them correctly was the good old LS command in a Linux terminal.
The mystery is eventually solved. It turns out his dad's phone included milliseconds directly in the file name, like ._0920-16029.jpg, while his phone added an extra underscore, like ._0957116.jpg. And the reason this messes things up is because of something called natural sort order.
Exactly. Most modern graphical file managers don't do a strict character-by-character alphabetical sort. When they see a string of digits, they treat it as a number. This is so that file 9.txt comes before file 10.txt, which is what most users intuitively expect. In the author's case, the file manager saw the number 09201609 and compared it to the number 09571. The first number is obviously much larger, so it got sorted later, breaking the chronological order.
The author is a purist, complaining that computers should do what you tell them to, not try to read your mind. But the top comment from Armchair Hacker points out that this mind reading is exactly what makes for an intuitive user experience. They also make the subtle point that file managers usually label this sort by name, not sort alphabetically, which gives them a bit of wiggle room. It's a perfect illustration of the tension between explicit, literal commands, like in the command line, and the do-what-I-mean philosophy of modern GUIs.
A great little story about a common frustration. Okay, next up is something purely fun. Place Snake in the URL address bar.
This is just delightful. It's the classic game Snake, but the entire game board is rendered inside your browser's URL bar. You use the arrow keys to control the snake, and the URL updates in real time to show the snake moving and eating food.
It's an amazing hack. The developer is using JavaScript to constantly update the URL fragment. That's the part of the URL after the hash symbol. They use Unicode Braille characters to essentially draw the pixels of the game board. It's incredibly clever and surprisingly responsive.
The comments are just full of praise for the creativity. One user points out a really thoughtful detail. The developer used history.replaceState instead of history.pushState. This means it updates the current URL without adding a new entry to your browser history for every single frame of the game. So when you hit the back button, you go right back to where you were before, instead of stepping through every move the snake made.
That is a pro move. Another commenter even offered a suggestion for improvement, saying you could use the full block braille character as a background and carve out the snake, which would make the grid spacing more consistent across different browsers. It's just a perfect example of the playful, creative hacking spirit that makes the web so much fun.
Absolutely. It's projects like this that remind you what's possible with just a bit of clever code.
All right, let's close out with our final story, which is a bit more serious. It's a UK petition, "Do not introduce digital ID cards." This petition on the official UK Parliament website has exploded, gathering over 2.3 million signatures.
The petition argues that introducing a national digital ID system would be a major step towards mass surveillance and digital control. This isn't a new fight in the UK. A plan for physical ID cards was very controversially debated and eventually scrapped back in 2010. This feels like the digital sequel.
The top comment on Hacker News from a user named Digit really nails the core of the opposition. They're a dual British/Swedish citizen, and they say that while digital ID systems can work well in places like Estonia or Scandinavia, they have zero trust in the UK government to implement one responsibly. They point to a long track record of the UK government using any new power to expand its own authority and surveillance capabilities.
That word, trust, is the key. Another commenter from Estonia chimed in, saying they find the resistance bizarre because their eID system enables so many convenient digital government services. But the replies to them immediately highlight that it's not about the technology itself. It's about the political context.
Precisely. Commenters pointed out that in countries where there's a deep-seated distrust between the citizens and the state, these tools are seen as dangerous infrastructure for things like social credit systems or central bank digital currencies, with China often cited as the cautionary tale.
It's a classic technology versus society debate. The efficiency and convenience of a digital ID system are undeniable. But the potential for abuse in the hands of a government that isn't trusted by a large portion of its population is also undeniable. Given the UK's lack of a codified constitution, which can make it easier for a government to push through sweeping changes, the stakes feel particularly high for the people signing this petition.
A very important discussion, and a reminder that the impact of technology is never neutral. It's always shaped by the society that wields it.
And that's all the time we have for today. From clever privacy tools to the future of coding and some wonderfully creative hacks, it's been another fascinating day on Hacker News.
Thanks for tuning in to HN Pod. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from the tech world.